Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
One thing I'm clear about is that I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And there's a tendency in Washington to think that our job description of elected officials is to get reelected. That's not our job description.
If we can go and take inmates, for instance, the 20,000 inmates that are illegal immigrants that are here, and get them to Mexico. Think about it. California gives Mexico the money. You take care of them. These are you citizens. No, not at all.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
If anybody can actually translate what Arnold Strudelman just said, I don't know what he just said about Mexicans or criminals in jail. He actually acknowledged that some illegal aliens are in prison. That's a first for an American politician, isn't it? I thought they all come here to work. Now, it is true that one-third of all prisoners are illegal aliens, primarily from Mexico. We're not allowed to know that any more than most terrorism is conducted by Islamic radicals. That's something else that the FBI denies, the police departments have been told to deny. They caught a guy in New York. Was it Virginia? You are not going to believe this story. You'll never believe it if I read it to you. I'm going to get to it today. But believe me, the headline is Islamic terrorism is neither Islamic nor terrorism. The headline from the Associated Pukes, who went through one of America's schools of brainwashing known as journalism. Their headline is, Man Arrested After Weapons, Map of U.S. Military Facility Seized from New Jersey Motel Room. What? Man arrested? What? The headline from the Associated Press did not tell you. What they buried in the story is the fact that they found a Middle Eastern red and white colored traditional headdress in his room. Now, it could be he was coming from his child's costume Halloween party. But the non-terrorist also had a bulletproof vest, a semi-automatic Bushmaster rifle, another Bushmaster 308 caliber semi-automatic rifle with a defaced serial number. It did not have a Jesus sight on it, a 37-millimeter Cobra grenade launcher, a second bulletproof vest, a Russian-made night vision scope, a police scanner, hundreds of rounds of 50 caliber ammunition, etc., and a map of a U.S. military installation. But the FBI immediately said this is not terrorism, and this has nothing to do with Islam. I don't know what the headdress was for. As I say, he could have been coming from a Halloween party, and so we shouldn't rush to judgment. We should leave it to our officials to tell us exactly what's going on, because they know everything. So now that's one story, but if you think that's crazy, you got to go to the San Francisco Bay Area to see crazy, crazy. It's one thing nationally to see crazy, but if you want to see crazy, crazy, you go to the website of the local newspaper. Here's a headline, Man Caught at Airport with 44 Lizards in Pants. We'll let that one go. Next headline, is 16 too young for a sex change? Is 16 too young for a sex change? That's the main question mark here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Well, it's not too young. If the parents are insane, why should the children be crazy? And then they have the most commented articles. One of them is, he's back. Conservative radio bad boy Michael Savage returns to SF. Why am I a bad boy? You mean because I stand up to the octomom mentality of the Bay Area? That makes me a bad boy because I don't go along with the program? Well, then I'm a proud... What do you mean bad boy? What a stupid out of... You know, you're so out of town in this city. Bad boy. That's like 1980s already. Grow up. I want to look at the lizard story myself. Why would a man bring in 44 lizards in his pants, I want to see. Let's see how they wrote this one up. A German reptile collector. That unto itself is rife with poetry. A German reptile collector. I've got to pore over those words a few times. A German reptile collector has been jailed for 14 weeks. Why 14 weeks? Oh, it's in New Zealand, I see. And must pay a $5,000 New Zealand fine for plundering New Zealand's wild gecko and skink populations, a judge has ruled. That's a complicated story. Hans-Kurt Kubis is to be deported to Germany as soon as he's released from prison. He was caught by wildlife in a Christchurch, blah, blah, blah. He was about to board an Amazon with the 44 geckos and skinks in a hand-sewn package concealed in his underwear. Well, it could have been his sexual preference. I don't think that he was necessarily smuggling endangered species. If he's from Germany and he was visiting New Zealand, there's a high likelihood he could get off on this charge by saying it was simply his sexual preference, that he likes skinks and geckos, and it had nothing to do, it's not your business, don't look in my pants. So, you know, why do you jump to conclusions? You may as well assume that the guy with the headdress and the guns and the night vision scope was coming from a Halloween party in this crazy world. 1-800-449-8255. Sports fans love an underdog, and in the uber-socialist Bay Area, Michael Savage is the biggest underdog the media has ever heard. He observes, that's me. That's because next Monday, Feb 1, the Savage Nation will be heard on KTRB, a 50,000-watt all-sports station. I will bury you. I will bury all of you other people in talk radio in the Bay Area. I shall bury you. I and Khrushchev shall bury you. This came to me from a sports fan, which already got lost 18 times already today. It's about how many people have used the name Nation. Apparently, there's not only the Raiders Nation, but there's the Red Sox Nation. There's this nation. There's that nation. And it all goes back to Michael Savage and the Savage Nation in 1994. Can you call me if you've heard the word nation being used by a sports team or others after I used it? It's amazing, but they all pick it up from me. Even that schmuck Colbert, it calls it the Colbert Nation. Would you believe it? How do they get away with stealing ideas the way Bush stole Compassionate Conservative? How? Because you can't copyright titles. That's number one. And number two, as Lao Tzu said, don't worry who rips you off as long as you know you did it. That was before there were intellectual property rights lawyers from NYU. Bay Area woman in wedding party slain in Antigua. That's a heartbreaker. Again, Antigua. Isn't that where Holloway was knocked off in Antigua? One of those islands down there in the Caribbean that... Yeah, I think it was Antigua. Anyway, this poor woman goes to a wedding party in Antigua. She is having a barbecue with family on the beach. She wanders off the barbecue, and they find her stabbed in the neck and molested. And they have a suspect. He has a gold tooth, and he's a local. But you have to read the story 18 times to find out who actually did it. I think they actually wanted to blame an Irish nun for the crime. The way most terrorism, as you well know, is not conducted by Islamic terrorists. It's conducted mainly by Christian nuns, primarily Irish nuns from Cork County. A study was done by the FBI which says that most terrorists are Irish nuns from Cork County, Ireland. And they're on the lookout now for nuns from Cork County, Ireland, who may be coming into America to disperse information about Jesus. And they are definitely on the watch list of the Obama administration. So, let's go to the callers, that's all. Oh, she was missing in Aruba. What's Aruba to me? Aruba, Antigua, it's all about the same. I don't like that area. I don't like the area, personally. I had an aunt, and I'll tell you personally why I don't like Aruba or that area. I will tell you why, because I've spent time in the real deep tropics for so many years that I'm a snob. I'm a tropic snob. Once you have collected medicinal plants in the far reaches of the archipelago of the Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Cook Islands and such, a person who goes to Aruba, there's nothing to it. There's nothing exciting about it. In fact, one of my aunts who passed away many, many decades ago, and I loved it dearly, all she talked about was her trip to Aruba and Curacao, and I couldn't wait never to go there, to be honest with you. Pittsburgh, PA. Phil, what's on your mind? Go ahead. Thanks for calling the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's an honor to speak to you. I'd like to tell you, I'm about 40 years old, and we've had the Steeler Nation here in Pittsburgh for as long as I've been around.
Really? So I stole it from them?
No, I'm not saying that, but it's called...
Well, no, maybe I did. I didn't even know it. I didn't even watch sports. Okay, you got me there. I'm glad. So how long ago did they call it the Steeler Nation?
For as long as I've been around here, but the reason why...
That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear I stole it subliminally. I didn't even know it.
Everyone lives here, and it's because we have such a backwards cronyism style of Democrat politics. Everybody votes party ticket till they die. Our roads are full of potholes. It's just,
Well, in San Francisco, the roads are full of pot. You're a step ahead of us.
Nah, I wouldn't go there, but I did have a question for you. talking about the gentleman that they found in New Jersey, was it? I'm getting ready to buy my first concealed carry handgun, and I wanted to see if you had any suggestions for which route I should go with it.
Now, do you currently own a handgun?
No, sir. It'll be my first one, but I've been going to the range frequently. And
all right, I can give you advice. First of all, I have or had an advertiser named Kel-Tec, and they make an incredible 380 handgun that is the smallest and lightest handgun made. And I actually picked it up when I went to Florida. For some reason, I couldn't get it in California. It's amazing. It has a laser sight on it. And I got to tell you something. There's nothing more frightening to a perp than having a red dot that scans the ground as you search for him, and the dot goes on his head. It tends to take a little of the vinegar out of their attempts to do something to you. Now, it's a small gun. A 380 round, don't kid yourself. You don't want to get hit with it. I would use it as a backup gun. I would not use it as a primary. As a primary gun, you got to use something on the order of a 357. I love, they're not an advertiser, but the Smith magnesium, the Magnolite, is an amazing weapon. It's got a tremendous powerful kick on it, though, because, again, it's made of such lightweight material. You have a conceal and carry permit in Pittsburgh?
Working on it.
Well, they're hard to get, as you well know, and you have to decide how bulky you want it, what are you using it for. Are you in police? You're not in police work.
No, sir. We do sports shooting frequently, but it's never gotten to the point where I was actually, I was previously married to a trauma nurse, and the rule was no guns, no motorcycles.
Yeah. Well, you need a gun in the house. Every home should have a gun. Every house in America where there's a legal American citizen should have a handgun in it. That's the first rule of America, was have a gun to protect yourself. That's number one. It would reduce the crime rate overnight so that they wouldn't feel you're going to sit there and dial a security company. Help is on the way. Don't you love those ads on TV? It's always a scared white woman in the house with two children. The husband left her to run off with his boyfriend, and she's alone with the children. And the burglar is always a white guy who looks like a white guy in a fraternity. He breaks in, and, oh, she runs upstairs, and she dials a security company. And they got a whole room full of people. Oh, don't worry. Help is on the way. By the time help arrives from one of those companies, you'll be tape ducked and shipped to Indonesia. Anyway, my favorite handgun in the world is still the best, most accurate, but they're not a conceal and carry gun. It's the old .45. You know the one I mean, the old military grade?
Old 1911.
You can't beat that gun. It's so heavy. It's so accurate. It's accurate. It's easy to shoot because it's so heavy, and it's easy to track, but it's not a conceal and carry gun. Let's not turn this into a gun show. I knew someone in the radio business who committed Harry Carey by doing this on a regular basis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were eight and you had bad
dreams. It is time for the tabloid moment on the Bad Boys show, the Savage Nation. Let's not go highbrow. Let's go lowbrow. Let's talk about Tiger Woods. See the picture of his wife, Ellen Nordegren, in tight pants and a tight sweater. I mean, this guy, you know the old joke, right? What are you going to go out for hamburger when you got steak at home? This guy had filet mignon at home, and he was going out for kennel ration. Is he crazy? You see this girl? I mean, this girl is after two children, a body on her that could stop trucks. Mack trucks would stop for this. Ellen Nordegren. And this guy was running after kennel ration. I never saw anything like it. Anyway, now they're not getting a divorce for the good of the kids. Who knows what it is? You know that she went after him with the club. I saw that right off the bat. I didn't need to, you know, it's like the FBI saying it's not terrorism with the headdress and bulletproof and maps. She's running after him with a golf club, beating in his car, and people call me up and say, no, she was trying to get him out because the window locked. Remember that? Common sense. Something that a person in your family who had not been brainwashed would have figured out 30 years ago, 40 years ago. They're all gone today. They're all gone. Where is everybody today? What happened to their brains? Where'd they go? No plans to run in 12, 16, or 20, anything, says Bloomberg. Thank God. Just because he's hiring a top Democratic political operative doesn't mean he's dreaming of the White House again. Okay, Mayor Bloomberg, this is a message to you from Michael Savage. You have as much chance to become president of the United States as, let's see, Manish Shevitz does of becoming the favorite fish of Saudi Arabia. Does that work, Beowulf? Because Manish Shevitz does put out a gefilte fish line, incidentally. I found out they're not limited anymore just to a bad wine. Mayor Rupert Bloomberg, I call him Rupert because I don't know his first name. Rupert Bloomberg has as much chance to become president of the United States, let us say, as Manish Shevitz does to become the favorite wine of the Saudi prince, for Saudi king. First of all, they're not supposed to even drink wine over there. That's number one, but I don't think it would be Manish Shevitz if they did. This guy, another one, an egomaniac. It reminds me of the rich, you know, the rich that they used to say years ago, they talked about a former mayor of New York, Ed Koch. I was never a fan of Ed Koch. He struck me as a garment center guy who got very rich in the needle trades and then thought he knew everything about nuclear physics. But that's what they said he was like. This was a guy, they said that no matter if you were a nuclear physicist and you talked to Ed Koch, he would argue nuclear physics with you as though he knew more about the theories, the current theories of nuclear physics than you did. And he would try to always beat you in an argument, even if you know what the hell he was talking about. To me, Mayor Bloomberg is about the same type of personality. So as I say, there's no chance he could ever become president. Not, why is he doing ego? Ego. Man with guns, grenades, map of military base arrested in New Jersey. There's a picture of him. Nice looking fella, you know. How'd you like that? How'd you like Mr. Woodson's face to be the last you see before you leave the earth? A man. And this is the man they found with a Islamic headdress. They said that the FBI said immediately it had nothing to do with terrorism. Presently, there's not to be a link to terrorism. What the hell is going on in this country? The whole world knows he was a terrorist. Presently, there does not appear to be a link to terrorism. He does not know terrorists. There is no specific terrorist plot. And the Islamic headdress was from a Halloween party that was left over by a previous guest in the hotel room. Right? A New Jersey motel room, Lloyd Woodson of Reston, Virginia, tried to hide when he was spotted acting suspiciously. Sanitation worker pinned by trailer and garbage truck is killed. Terrible. I don't even want to think about that. It's horrible. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Don't be here or you'll be nowhere.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
If we can go and take inmates, for instance, the 20,000 inmates that are illegal immigrants that are here, and get them to Mexico. Think about it. California gives Mexico the money. Not that, hey, you take care of them. These are U.S. citizens. No, not at all. We pay them to build a prison down in Mexico. And then we have those undocumented immigrants be down there in a prison. And with their prison guards and all this, it would half the cost to build the prisons and half the cost to run the prisons.
Of course, because they treat them like they should be treated in Mexico. No, they come here, they get, of course, $50,000 a year to treat an illegal alien in a jail. Ethnic meals and, you know, video lessons on how to become a cinematographer. It's not a bad idea, but, I mean, you know, it's not going to happen. He probably wants to run for office. He figures now's the time to act tough again. Should have done this when he started. Anyway, to go back to an important story, Tiger Woods' wife, Ellen Nordegren, who looks great in those pants and sweater, is not going to divorce him. She said she doesn't want to raise their kids without a dad. And she went to Mississippi, where Tiger Woods is holed up in sex rehab. She visited her husband at the Gentle Path Sexual Addiction Clinic in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where he's been getting treatment. Now, I guess that's as good a place as any to have sexual addiction treatment, because so far as I know, there aren't too many babes. I could be mistaken in Hattiesburg. You say Hattiesburg to me, Mississippi, and I mean no disrespect meant. I immediately think of women in like daguerreotypes from the Civil War. I don't know what people look like there, but I can't imagine there are as many, let's say, temptations as in Los Angeles, you know, or New York. Like, that's a good place for a sexual addiction clinic. You go out for like a stretch, there's nothing to see. Is there a temptation there? Are there babes in Hattiesburg that must listen to the show, some of them? I have an affiliate out there. Who builds a sexual addiction clinic in a place like that? Amazing. A corner market staffer in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, said she definitely stood out of Ellen, who shopped at the high-end grocer on January 23rd. She was beautiful. She was walking around alone trying to keep to herself. That's just what the people in the sexual addiction clinic needed, was Ellen Nordegren to show up to visit him. Yeah, they were doing well until she showed up. They all had a relapse. I mean, come on. Shouldn't there be some kind of, like, you can't come to the sexual addiction clinic for the sake of the other inmates? I mean, the other treatment people, whatever they're doing there. How do you get treated for sexual addiction? Is there really such a thing as sexual addiction? I got to ask this question. I've never touched on this. But it's a very interesting topic to me because so far, I know a lot of guys who are very attracted to women. They can't stop. I know guys who are old and they date constantly, constantly thinking of sex and women and love and romance and candles and dinners and bed. Constant. They don't stop. Is that an addiction or is it called a life force? In this country, everything it's turned into a disease. Childbirth, a natural process, a once natural process, was turned into a disease by the medical establishment. How could this be a disease? If a man is attracted to women into old age, isn't that something to celebrate rather than to medicate? How did they do these things? Now, in his case, it had to be called a sexual addiction for him to hold on to the wife. The guy was a dog. There's no question about it. He was married. He violated the vows. Okay, that's different. But why call it sexual addiction? He was a dirtbag. You know, if the guy was cheating on her, and I'm not saying he should have, let's say he occasionally, as a sports star, was on a road, he got tense, and there was a waitress or whatever, and no one knew. That's one thing. But by the number of women, seems to me like every second, an obsession. Texting and calling, that's another part of it, by the way. Once you started with the texting and the calling, that already is a mental illness. That's an obsession. Anyway, you want to talk about sexual addiction? It's a tough topic to talk about without getting stupid. But I don't know, is there such a thing as sexual addiction? What does that actually mean? That you like sex a lot? By what standard? By what is the norm for sexual desire? That should become a disease? At what point does it become a disease? What if a person just simply likes to have sex? And it's consensual, and he's not hurting anybody, he's not married, let's say. Let's put aside the moral issue of married. So now the guy is single or the girl is single. And they just like to have a roll in the hay. Where is the addiction part in that? Explain that to me. I don't understand where that is. There are some people who are, by the way, disinterested in sex. From the earliest age, they could live without it. And they're good looking, some of them. I met them in my life. Once I met somebody like that. Once. I heard there were others. But generally, people who are alive want sex. If you're alive and you have a life force in you, gusto. Remember eating with gusto, what that once was? Where you dove into a meal and when men would dive into a plate of food and slurp it? That was gusto. Who eats with gusto now? Everyone's so refined. They're so refined. Everybody eats with indifference. Everything's indifferent. But that's called a life force. That keeps you alive, doesn't it? Well, you don't want to talk about it, that's all. Oh, here's a caller on sex addiction, and where is it coming from? This is so much better than talking about Obama and his communism. No, really, believe me, this beats him. First of all, he's on the way down. Listen, this guy is sinking under his own weight, so you don't even have to do anything with Obama right now. The less you say about him, the better. Because each time he talks now, his poll numbers go down. The press is no longer in love with him. The independents already said, you know, take your BS and shove it. And the diehard, you know, left-wing fanatic Democrats who live on welfare and get government contracts, they're never going to stop liking him any more than the Bushies stop defending Bush to the end. So don't even talk about Obama. Just let him keep doing his thing. Oh, I'll talk about that in another way in a minute. I watched a movie last night about the Dr. Zhivago. I had seen the David Lean version years ago with Julie Andrews? No, who was in that? The David. Oh, who? Julie Christie, so beautiful. Like you fell in love with her, right? She played Lara. Who was the lead, the guy? Not Omar Sharif. Omar Sharif, he was great as Dr. Zhivago, but I saw a better version last night. I don't know. It was on a channel called Oviat. I don't know what Oviat is. It sounds like something to do with ovaries. I don't know where it comes from, but it's a weird channel on cable now, Oviat. It almost sounds like an odd channel, but it isn't. They have all of these wonderful classic movies like Madame Bovary. So this was like an English version. It was so well done about the Russian Revolution and what communism actually brought to the country, the horrors of communism. We'll do that later. I want to go back instead to something very American. Only in America could we turn sex into an addiction and a disease. So there could be treatment and treatment facilities, and the health insurance industry has to pay for it. Don't you get it? Everything's an illness and needs a pill and a treatment, and then the government has to pay for it. The government picks up your sex addiction. And here's another question for you. If you've ever been in a sex addiction clinic, tell me the truth. Call whatever you have to do. Change your name, of course. Cover the microphone. My guess is a good place to meet women and have a little fun. Mark in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, you're cracking me up today. It's really funny.
I'm in a good mood. I feel liberated. So what are you going to tell us about sex addiction?
Well, I think I've probably been one all my life.
You're one of them folks, huh?
Well, it's not a... In the 50s, we used to have Make Out Lane or whatever in the convertibles and listen to the music you play on the radio.
That's right. In fact, I thought about that last night. I said, in my day, we went out in a car and we got in the back seat. But where is it up with you today? Are you a real nutcase or what?
Well, my friends maybe think so. I'm 58. I've got a 19-year-old girlfriend. Really,
oh, you
mind,
son of a gun. You had to ruin my day, huh?
No, it's... I've just always had a healthy sex appetite. I raised a
family. Yeah, but is she with you for your money or for your sex drive?
Well, I just had a heart attack. I'm living off.
Oh, God. From her?
No. Actually, when I was near death, I said a prayer to God. And apparently, my prayer was answered because that's what I
wanted. What do you mean? When you're near death, you ask God for a new girlfriend?
Yeah, I thought, I can't die. There's a girl out there that needs me. And by God, I pulled through an amazing. I only had.
Well, where'd you meet her? How'd you meet her?
Well, I met her playing checkers on the internet, and after a while, we just thought, wow, we could really live together better than we live apart.
That's amazing. You found a compatible mate playing checkers on the internet?
That's been over a year now. I mean, if she wanted to leave, she would have been gone.
But before your heart attack and before the girl. When you say sex addiction, how many times a week did you have to be with a woman to feel sane?
Oh, fairly often. I've went out every Friday, Saturday, Wednesday, and sometimes I even dated twice in the same night. If a girl had to be home by 9, okay, get her home at 9, and then I'm off.
Yeah, but when you say date, Mark, I mean, I don't want to get graphic. It's a family show. Do you mean you always had a woman and you always wound up in the bedroom with her?
Well, now, that's going too far. You don't have to have actual sex. You can do an awful lot of things with a woman. Just kissing and cuddling for long periods of time will do. When I turned 14 in school, I got my motorcycle license. There's always a girl that wants to ride home. And once the parents know that you're safe, you can sit there and make out till they get home. And they come home, they say, well, who's there? It's just Mark. And they let
All right, so you had a high sex drive, and now you had a heart attack while you smoked?
And I still smoke. I like it.
well, we're not going to go there. Smoking, I think, is the biggest factor in a majority of heart attacks amongst males. Number one factor is the smoking. It's probably a higher risk factor than the saturated fat lie.
Well, we can eat right.
All right, we'll go. And this is already getting on the bordering on the New York City. WOR. We're talking about a topic. Thank God that everyone likes already. It's not about illegal immigrants. It's not about the economy, stupid. It's not about terrorism. It's not about headdresses. It's not about machine guns. This is something that is so American. It's as good as apple pie. It's about sex addiction. Now, that's a topic everybody wants to hear about. This is probably one of the most vicariously interesting topics in the history of talk radio, particularly on a political show. New York, WOR, what do you know about sex addiction? Robert.
Oh,
Robert.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I work in IT security, and I see firsthand what a sex addiction is. The bottom line, sex addiction is anytime sex interferes with normal common sense when a guy is at work and he can't keep it in his pants, and that's a sex addiction.
Oh, wait a minute. You say you're in a security business where, like, you watch buildings and stuff?
No. I investigate security incidents that have to do with computers. So,
Oh, so you go into offices and find people under the desk? All right. Well, that's another story, you know. But, I mean, what? Okay. Tell me how you declare, how you define the difference between a normal, strong sex drive, let's put it on the high end of normal, and sex addiction? What's the difference? Because I'd like to know. I'd like to know what that means. I'd like to know. Chicago, Paul. Chicago, you say you've been addicted to sex your whole life?
I call.
Paul, you've been addicted to sex your whole life?
I'm 51 years old. I'm not addicted to sex. I'm a red-blooded American, and that's all I think of constantly, just like every other guy that I know.
That's right, and that's absolutely true. In other words, a lot of guys don't know that every other guy is thinking about it about every 13 seconds.
If you talk about it, yeah. You can't walk into a grocery store. You can't walk into a department store. It's what you do. It's what guys do.
Well, the fact is that we live in the most sexually promiscuous society the world has ever seen. Sex is everywhere. There's no getting away from it. You cannot get away from the salacious imagery, number one, which provokes these impulses in people, by the way. There's a way to provoke it and a way to damp it down. But let's say that we live in this society. Wherever you go, there's a picture of a girl, provocative, this and that. So how do you act this out, Paul? I assume you're not married.
Oh, I am married. I'm married for over 28 years. I've never cheated on my wife. And you could say there's these provocative pictures, but that brings me to the other point of my call to you, sir. You said something about a sex addiction clinic in Mississippi or Missouri. I'm thinking.
Yeah. Tiger Woods is in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, at the Gentle Path, whatever, sex addiction clinic.
There's got to be more beautiful girls there than there are in all of California with all the phony lips, the boobs, all the plastic surgery they get to look like what or to look like who? Like Donald Duck by the time they turn.
Yeah, I know those lips are horrible. They're horrible looking. But he's at the Gentle Path Sexual Addiction Clinic in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So you're saying there's a lot of babes in Hattiesburg?
I bet there are, and I bet they're all beautiful.
So that's why they set up the sex addiction clinic there. So when the guy relapses, he's got immediately an outlet. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone.
We stumbled on an interesting topic, you know, for an afternoon here. Make believe you're in Cafe Savage and just chatting. We're talking about sexual addiction. Is it real? Because now Tiger Woods claims he's a sexual addict. And he's in Mississippi. He's in Mississippi in a sex rehab place, Gentle Path Sexual Addiction Clinic in Hattiesburg. And his wife Ellen goes down there, and the whole town comes to like, wow, who's that? So what I started to joke about is there such a thing as sexual addiction? How do you define the difference between a normally high sex drive and sexual addiction, for example? Because there are people on the whole curve of sexual desire or want that ranges from who could care less to my God, I got to get more, 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 to then all the way the insane side. And I'd like to know how do you define it? And what's the real treatment for it? How do you treat an addiction like this? Jane in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a psychologist, and I love this Gentle Path place. I wish I owned it. Unlike my colleagues, I don't believe in this. I don't believe in
it. So you agree with me that this whole idea, the whole notion of sexual addiction is kind of ridiculous?
Of course. It's another pathologizing of human behavior. It can be a neurotic attempt at anxiety management, but in general, somebody won't say no to themselves. It's not an addiction.
A neurotic attempt at anxiety management, that's a pretty good statement unto itself. A neurotic attempt at anxiety management, of course, it would be healthier to manage the anxiety by playing golf, I suppose, if you're married to Ellen Nordgren, rather than to run around with sleazeballs. But you agree with me, a lot of this is just simply turning this into a medical situation in order to treat it as such and to use health insurance.
There's huge amounts of money, and once it has a code, it's going to get paid for. So absolutely, it is a compulsion.
Well, will sex addiction be treated under Obamacare? I can guarantee it will.
Absolutely. Are you kidding? It'll probably be before heart disease, sure.
Oh, my God. Everyone, like now, they're all bipolar. I love it. Every time they catch a criminal, he was bipolar before he committed the mass murder. And it was an undiagnosed bipolar disorder.
Job security, I can probably go into this.
Jane, you're a psychologist, probably a little older, I suppose. Explain to me with this bipolar crap. What does it really mean, bipolar? People are depressed and happy? And they go up and down like every other human being? What do you mean, bipolar?
Michael, bipolar's the new black. Everybody's bipolar.
Everyone's bipolar, right? You have another Obamacare item to check off on the box.
You know, it's really a shame.
So you're a great psychologist. So how do you fix people with sex addictions?
I don't think. Well, first of all, I don't go near it because it's a compulsive behavior. There's choice involved, and if you say there's choice, then there's no.
Let's talk about female sexual addiction known as nymphomania. I once did an interview in the year 2000 with a woman who wrote a book called Nympho, A History by Carol Groneman. And she says she lumped nymphomania in with this. She wrote this: anecdotal case studies luridly detail the hodgepodge of equally distressing perversions, quote-unquote, including cunnilingus, fellatio, fetishism, homosexuality, masochism, necrophilia, nymphomania, pederasty, sadism, satyriasis, and voyeurism. That's quite a list to lump all those terms together, don't you think?
Michael, I think, you know, that's probably a woman who was sexually abused as a child and is trying to gain power back over that. It's a power deal for women. It's not about having orgasms. I think it's a different thing than for men in general.
It is?
Yeah, it is. And most men who are promiscuous, it's a choice. It's a compulsive behavior that has an element of choice in it. They're not going to go and withdraw if they don't do it. It's a moral issue, and yes, they can be neurotic and compulsive about it, but they're not going to be in withdrawal like a true addiction.
In your experience, when does a strong sex drive disappear in a man age-wise, and when does it disappear in a woman?
I think in men's 40s, it starts to quiet a bit.
You know, it's not the men I know. It got worse when they were 50 and 60. Well, Each decade, they get even more sexually desirous.
Since the advent of Viagra, right?
Yes, it's very interesting. With the advent of Viagra and hair growth formula, there's no end to it, is there?
That's right. But Michael, I want to say something about what you were talking about yesterday. I'm so glad you're going to go on that sports channel because the psychology...
Hold on. I'm going to talk to you at the top of the next hour. From sex to sports, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sing along. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We were talking about politics and the news of the day and the absurdities of the media and the insanity of what we're getting out of the government today. They catch a guy in a motel room in New Jersey with guns and vests and night vision, and he's got a Middle Eastern headscarf, and the FBI says there's no link to terrorism. Woodson does not appear to have a link to any known terrorism groups. No, the headdress came from his child's Halloween party. So we all know we're living in a sea of bullcrap, as you well know. So then I go over to another story filled with rubbish, which is about the golfer, Tiger Woods, who, as I say, he had filet mignon at home and he was looking for kennel ration. Everywhere he turned, he looked for another can of dog food. So now he's in a sexual addiction clinic called the Gentle Path Sexual Addiction Clinic in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where he's getting so-called treatment. And who shows up? His knockout of a Swedish wife, in tight pants, tight sweater, and they say she definitely stood out. So you can imagine what went on in the clinic when she showed up. And how are we all feeling today? How are we? Do we understand our motives? Do we understand that this is not really us? Do we understand this is just coming from somewhere else, from another place? And Tiger, would you please stand? And before Tiger stands up, we have a very, very special guest for all of you, and that's Tiger's wife, Ellen. Would you come in? And all of a sudden, there's immediate relapse. The guys go running out looking for the college girls of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. But get back to this. Is there such a thing as sexual addiction is what I asked in the last hour on the Savage Nation. And it's interesting to me because we could talk about all we want, Obama, but it's a waste of time for one reason. He's finished. He's finished. Not only are his policies a disaster, once America actually saw Karl Marx, the Karl Marx from Indonesia, they realized it. But on top of it all, every time he does something, he's moving further to the left. So therefore, he is collapsing under his own ideology. So don't say anything more. You don't even have to say anything because the defenders are never going to believe you, number one. And those who don't like him already don't like him. So why talk about it? That's why I'd rather talk about, is there such a thing as sex addiction? And joining us now again is Jane of Sacramento, who is a psychologist who says there is no such thing as sex addiction. Jane, welcome back. So you were going to say something before we...
Yeah, it's a racket. I bet that's $30,000 to $40,000 minimum, by the way. I want a T-shirt from that Gentle Paths place. I think that's going to be the new hot outfit for the spring.
The Gentle Paths Sex Addiction Clinic. You talk about meeting people. That's a great way to meet. It's like a billboard.
Michael, what I wanted to say is I'm so excited you're going to go on that sports station because I think you have underestimated the importance of sports in the collective psyche. I think...
Go ahead. I have underestimated the power of sports in the collective psyche. Tell us how.
I have 2 points I wanted to share with you. One is, I think it's civilized. It's war with rules. I think sports civilize aggressive and competitive...
Totally agree with you. It's war with rules. And if we could only get the Islamic fascists on a basketball court with an American basketball team, and if they played by the rules, it would all be over.
Exactly. I really believe that because it's how civilized men bump up against each other. Have you ever had the opportunity to be high up at a hockey game in one of those booths?
In a hockey game? I don't remember being high at a hockey game, though.
No. I mean, like, if you sit really high up in the stands, you can see. It's the best example.
I've gone to 3 hockey games in my life. I've liked them because, for one reason, hockey is the fastest of all sports. Number two, I love the smell of the ice. But other than that, I'm not a fanatic, and I do like them banging into the walls and the puck and the flying and the skates. And it reminds me of like a daguerreotype of the 1890. No, so what's the point?
Well, my point is that if you look back from afar, it's the greatest example. They're running fast. Get to the ball.
They look like little spermatozoans swimming around on the ice with sticks in their hand.
Get to the egg, and I think that's in the male psyche so strongly.
But what is the egg? The net is the egg?
No, the puck, or the organic.
So in other words, a catcher's mitt is now a womb?
I think it's very interesting.
I'm sure this has been written. Has this been written in psychology textbooks?
Very much, because you know it's not politically correct. But I think men enjoy. You know,
oh, you've got a book in you on this one.
Men need sports. Women enjoy them, but I think men need them, and I think it civilizes them, and I think it's really, really important. And yesterday you said something about stress reduction, about how you get on the boat and all you can think of is the boat. Well, for many, many men, they get in there, and yeah, it doesn't really matter who wins, but that's the good part, because you can get all excited and all upset, but in the end, you're okay. You know what? It's not life or death. And I think we need that.
Well, I'm not arguing with you. I mean, I understand it, but I'm not a competitive sports type. I'm more of the kind of guy who likes to compete with myself and meet challenges on my own. I don't like to compare myself to anyone else. But when I had to step up, for example, from a 28-foot boat to a 42-foot boat, I was intimidated. I was really scared to have to take that twin-engine boat out on my own, and I wasn't going to do it until one day an idiot I went out boating with got mad at me and stepped off the boat and said, screw you, and left me in the city. And I had to drive the boat back alone across the bay. And guess what? Despite him, I wouldn't say, please come back. I drove the boat back across the bay, and that's how I learned how to drive a twin-engine boat. This is 15 years ago. Now, stepping up from a 42 to a 60 is another challenge. Like, oh, my God, am I really going to be able to drive it? Guess what? It's the same principle. It's a matter of just getting used to it. But that's the kind of thing that when you're doing it, your mind is only on that. I guess guys who fly planes tell me the same thing. When they're in that plane, there's nothing else. Their mind is totally on that particular aircraft, the instrument panel, the sky, and that's about it. You can't think about anything else if you're really flying the plane.
No, it's a wonderful sense of flow and mastery, and it's a race to excellence, and it's really, really important. So I'm so.
And there's always something new to learn. There's no end to learning how to fly, and there's no end to learning how to boat. And I guess there's no end to learning how to golf, or no end to learning how to swim. I mean, you can always keep improving yourself if you're really into self-challenging. But let's go back to nymphomania. Do you think that as a category is real?
I think it's, I think it's different in men than women. I think most women are trying to regain power over some kind of sexual abuse when they're young, because women.
But the whole phrase nymphomania became passé in the age of political correctness, didn't it? They threw it out as something that was created by men, like Freud.
Remember, there used to be shame in women wanting sex until we got the pill, and then there was shame in not having sex, right? A woman who wanted sex was a nymphomaniac. A man was a stud, right? And then, but
yes.
You don't hear that very much anymore, because every girl, you know, the girls now do shots before they go, the college girls do shots before they go out at night, before they leave
the
dorm.
Yeah, but in the older phrase, women who were sexually promiscuous were considered nymphomaniacs, but they never called a man who was so charged, somebody suffering from satyriasis, even though it's known as a medical terminology, in medical terminology. How often have you used or heard the phrase satyriasis recently?
No, you don't hear it at all. But you do consider a man who can't control his impulses in any way rather immature, do you not?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. But today's sex addiction, you'd have to agree, is more likely to wear a male face. And it's usually associated with a ball player or with movie stars or politicians, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's very glamorous. Call it an addiction, and then everybody feels sorry for you, and you get to go to some country club for a month and talk about your feelings and, I don't know.
Can you imagine Obamacare would actually pay for sex addiction in a clinic? How much does that cost a year, do you think?
It's between $30,000 and $40,000 a month at a non-high-end place.
At a month, $30,000 a month?
Huh?
It'd be cheaper for the guy to just go out and take care of his addiction, wouldn't it?
Well, remember, we call addictions when they start interfering with your life. Like, for instance, if you're on pain medicine.
In other words, when his wife caught him and ran after him with a golf club, that's when it became an addiction. Before that, it was just an outlet.
Basically. Yeah. Michael,
so is your practice limited to sexual problems or not?
My practice is limited to how much I can keep my mouth shut, because I have a lot of people still coming into my office. And somebody got up at the end of the session a couple weeks ago and said, well, thank God the 8 years of Bush is over. And I thought, what in the God's name did that have? I mean, if I spoke out loud, I would be starving.
You'd be out of business, particularly where you are in Northern California.
Absolutely. I would never.
Now, define before you go, Jane, satyriasis, because most people don't know what it is. I brought up the term because I do know what it is. But what is satyriasis?
I think I can, Michael.
Oh. Okay, satyriasis, I suppose, is what we're talking about. That's sexual addiction in a male. It used to be known as satyriasis. Come and let us dance like satyrs bound, S-A-T-Y-R. I remember writing a poem about it when I was 18 years old, about the devil approaching me, and I said, come and let us dance like satyrs bound. I thought it was a great line.
Yeah,
In other words, instead of fearing the devil, you got to invite the devil towards you. It's the only way to beat him. You know that?
I agree with you.
Do you agree with that? That's an interesting concept. I should get the whole thing into temptation, what the devil is, how do you deal with the devil, do you really have to fear the devil, or do you have to just engulf the devil like an amoeba and destroy him?
That the truth shall set you free.
But you want to hear the real truth about it, Jane? I learned it from a holy man 25, 30 years ago. He said to me that the bigger the evil impulse is in a person, the bigger the saint the person can become. In other words, he's not exactly saying embrace the evil side of yourself, but he's saying learn, A, to accept that that's you, and B, then learn to channel it into a positive way and you can conquer the world. That's what he taught me 30 years ago. My whole life changed. When he said, in other words, that don't look at pieces of yourself that you don't like and say, I'm dirty, I'm evil, I'm no good. What he said was, is that is you. That's a part of you. And he said, that's actually a great part of you. That's tremendous energy. Learn how to take that energy and control it. And you could do anything. And that's really the message of all therapy, isn't it, Jane?
No, it's the message of mine, but it's not the message of most.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. What does most therapy tell people to do with the evil impulse? They wouldn't call it evil, but let's say the impulses that they're trying to control. What would therapists tell them to do today?
No, they pass out the victim sweatshirts on the first day.
Oh. I'm blank. Fill in the blank.
10 years later, you can go out because you've gotten over it and you're bored with it.
You know
anyway.
What bums me out, Jane? I watch a lot of these shows, Locked Up Here, you know, or the parole boards all over. And they spend all day long while I'm breaking my behind here trying to create a show. They're sitting having a good time, you know, stroking each other's back with, oh, yeah, I was an addict when I was a little boy. My father left my mother. She was a hooker. She was a hoe, whatever. What do they do all day long? That's all they do in prisons now is have therapy?
Well, they sing Kumbaya, and you're right, they get some skills.
Well, Sheriff Joe knew the right treatment. Put him in a striped suit and let him go out and work. It's the best therapy there is instead of complaining about what your mother didn't do for you. Jane, I'll bet you right now I could get you 1,000 new clients across America. They all want to know you. Is there any way for them to look you up without you losing your practice?
Well, I actually probably lost most of it today after this conversation, but I actually work in Santa Clara. So.
Okay. So you don't want to give out the practice because people are going to call you. I'm telling you.
I'll tell you
what we'll do. We're not going to do it now. You're going to think about it. Maybe we'll have you on as Dr. Jane once in a while to talk about sex and other addictions on the Savage Nation.
I'd love it. And I'm so grateful for you. I'm so grateful
Jane,
for you for your fight.
Do you think I'm a psychologically whole person? Jane, diagnose me on the air. Am I sane or insane?
You're a hole and a half added to it, Michael.
I love people who ask doctors, am I sane? Half the doctors are crazy. How could you ask a guy who's nuts to tell you whether you're sane or insane?
Don't get me started on the people in my field.
Oh, don't get me started on the people in your field either, Jane. We could talk forever, but I got to run. Thank you for calling. I'll be right back.
Savage. Yes, it's me and I'm in love.
Well, we're going to move on from sex addiction to, I don't know, something related to sex addiction, but not exactly. The law firm Trope and Trope, which represents Ellen Nordegren, the wife of golfer Tiger Woods, also represents the wife of Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper is one of my favorite actors. I've always liked him from the motorcycle movie with Peter, whatever his name is, Fonda. I always liked Easy Rider, but I always liked Dennis Hopper's acting. I thought he was actually a fabulous actor. And so now here's this guy. He marries this girl 14 years ago. He has three children from a previous marriage. He has one young child with this woman. Now he's on his deathbed with prostate cancer. He's got a month to live, and he's threatening to he's divorcing her because she's not happy with a prenup which says she gets 40% of his estate. Now, remember, she gets 40, so that's 20 for her, 20 for their kid, and then 20 each for the three children. I think it's extremely fair, and she signed the prenup, so now that's not good enough. So she now has a legal filing, and she says alleged gun threats, verbal abuse, and drug use. That's all. This is wonderful on man's deathbed. In 09, I discovered a pistol with multiple rounds of ammunition in petitioner's bedroom drawer. Duh. Does that mean he used it? The gun and ammunition was unsecure and easily accessible, including to the child. See, this is a scum, verminous lawyer wrote this up. The kind of lawyers that need, you know, full-time protection because they're such wonderful people. The kind of lawyers whose children are punished unto the third generation because of the wonderful acts they commit in the society. Anyway, I don't want to even read anymore. It's disgusting. How much does this guy make anyway? It's not even a lot of money. Look what she's going after here. She says she signed their jointly filed 08 tax return and that their total income was stated as over $1.2 million. And that Hopper has a $1 million life insurance policy. That's what she's fighting over? I mean, I'm not spitting at it, but there's not a lot of money here. She's going to get that's all she's getting out of all to make it into a big celebrity divorce. You think there was $500 million at stake here or more? It's ridiculous. Everything that the star does is suddenly important. I'd like if they auctioned off Tiger's SUV with the smashed-in window. I think I'd buy it from the Savage Museum. Only if I could buy the golf club to go with it. If you'd like to comment on sex addiction, particularly if you're a woman and you have been in treatment, I think that a lot of guys would love to have a vicarious thrill today. So call the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back. Be here or be absolutely nowhere.
Savage.
Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Go back for a minute to the Dennis Hopper divorce. It turns out he has a very extensive art collection that's greatly, you know, gone up in value. Meanwhile, the wife apparently worked for Obama. It said she was swept into a world of Democratic politics. No kidding. Beverly Hills, Hollywood, Venice, Democrat, cows in Berkeley. Becoming heavily involved in Obama's campaign, Hopper had actually been a Republican, a libertarian, really, with a thing for gun collecting, but he came to the conclusion that Bush had screwed things up, and so he endorsed Obama and at least publicly supported his wife. All right, big deal. Who cares what they do? The fact of the matter is, it's another divorce, another set of lawyers, another set of liars, and everyone's out for the most they can get, and a whole lifetime goes up in smoke when both sides, you know, hire lawyers who destroy whatever's left. And they take a good percentage of it. See, lawyers, particularly divorce lawyers, what do you think? They want a settlement? They don't want a settlement. They want to keep it going as long as they can, so they fuel the animosity. It's terrible, though. Here's a guy on a deathbed. And we were talking about satyriasis, nymphomania, and other such topics like sex addiction. And I actually asked you if you think, because on the show now I'm switching from politics to sex and sports, only if the... Only if the politics are collateral to sex and sports will I talk. Well, I talk about, you know, talking about sex and sports and Obama. He does play basketball, but he's the least. I don't know how to get into this. With Clinton, we knew what we had there. We had a Randy, you know. All right, that was one thing. You charming devil, you. We knew with Clinton what we had. Bush, forget about it. Him and Laura, I think twice with the two children. That was it. It's like a teacher. You can only imagine like. How many children do you have, Mrs. Jane? Two? Thank you. So you imagine her, she had sex twice in her life. It was the same with Bush and his wife. God bless him. You could never imagine them, you know what I'm saying, ever. And like Obama? I don't think so. I'm sorry. I don't even want to go into that. But there's no hint. Thank God with this guy, there's no hint of like a Tiger Woods-like streak in him. We got to be thankful that there's no, you know, there's no hidden Bill Clinton in this guy. And that's because I think all of his animus towards people comes out with his Marxism. He gets it all out that way. Arizona, Lydia, welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your story, please.
Okay, well, I think that you can use sex like you would use other substances like drugs and alcohol to self-medicate emotional problems.
And, now tell us how that worked for you. You would not feel good. You would get nervous. You'd feel depressed, and you'd go out and have sex.
Yeah. I also suffer from like childhood sexual abuse, so I guess I don't know what all that meant. But I actually recovered from it, and I didn't. It didn't cost anything. You know, I went to church, and you know, just kind of started to learn how to deal with. You know, emotional problems by overcoming them.
So you didn't need to go to an Obama-like sex rehabilitation clinic like Tiger is in. You found God, and that was the end of the problem.
Well, yeah, and I think maybe what they do at...
Now, wait, this is important because I don't want to sound like I'm cynical about this. Kind of tell us what that means. What do you mean by you found God? So how did that deal with your impulses? How did God help you control your impulses?
Well... I had serious emotional problems where I felt really bad about myself. So, and it wasn't just finding God. I don't want to proselytize, but, you know, when I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior, like, I started to believe that I can have a new life. So a lot of my problems, a lot of the things that happened to me, I wasn't a slave to them anymore, you know? Like, I started to believe that I could have a new start. So a lot of my problem that I was stuck in was because I just was affected by things that happened to me. So for me...
But the bottom line is you believe there is sexual addiction, but on the other hand, you don't think a person needs to be medically treated. They can do it through religion is basically an objective takeaway message, I would say. Lydia, thanks for talking about a very touchy topic, but is there such a thing as sex addiction? Louisiana, Ed, go ahead, please. Your opinion counts. What do you think?
Well, first off, I want to say one of the things that makes this show great, I expect that you start talking about Obama wanting to do a three-year freeze on federal spending, at least in discretionary spending. But it's sex, which is great.
Well, isn't that more interesting than Obama and a spending freeze?
Absolutely. This is something that I think more is sort of like, you know, this is impacts us all, that stuff. This is something that is very
useful. That is right. I don't know a person listening to this show that does not at some point in a day have this as an issue in their life. I can't imagine any living person, unless they're suffering, let's say, a terminal illness where this is no longer on your mind or whatever, or you're an infant or a child or very, very aged, I can't imagine that this is not an issue for anyone listening to the show.
Yeah, I want to give kudos to Jane, the psychologist who doesn't buy the latest victim du jour. That's amazing. I don't meet too many psychologists who are like that. So kudos to her, but I'd like to take it a step beyond her approach to it and go down to biology. This is something that is biologically hardwired into all of us, and we got to remember that we're different beings.
What do you mean? The sex drive is wired, and of course, it's the strongest impulse there is. But isn't it strange that in some people it's off the charts strong?
Is it? I mean, when you go back, I remember I looked on the internet once at life expectancy tables in the 1920s in America, and they were like just over 50. So I think 53 for men and maybe 56 for women.
Right.
That was sort of, you know, at a time America's the greatest technologically advanced nation during that time. So you go figure that in the 1820s in Western society, maybe they were in the 40s or something. I know before Victorian and for the industrial times that there was like a 50%. Infant mortality rate in the Western countries. That's huge. So if you go back to prehistory before, let's say, 20,000 B.C., I mean, that humans must have lived into their 30s or something, or maybe even less than that for a whole lot of them. So,
Alexander the Great lived a rather short life. I mean, I don't think he was the model of the norm or the mean age at which people died. But men did die much younger in different times. But then you had, you know, it's very complicated because that norm was derived from a large statistical value, which included a large swath of the population dying, let's say, of the plague. And those who, let's say, didn't get swept away by the plague may have lived to 100. I mean, I don't really know the data on that. I haven't studied it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you weren't taken away by the plague or died in war, what actually would the longevity have been in those days?
Yes, sir. I think what I'm trying to say...
But we're getting off the track. What does that have to do with sex drive?
Well, I think that there's a biological imperative that's hard-coded into male mammals to indiscriminately spread their seed. And I think in our modern society, we have to... And by modern, I mean, you know, going back to 700 B.C. or something, where we have Western values established.
Well, and in some parts of America, it's still a modern value to live that way, and, you know... But it's also a cultural thing, by the way. There are various subsets of the population who have no constraint upon their sexual impulses. You know that.
Well, you should have.
I had a friend years ago who said this to me. He was a very intelligent guy. He said to me that it's very curious to him that the rich and the poor men, rich men and poor men, have something in common, which is that they're both extremely promiscuous.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's what I'm saying. It's Well, here's an interesting kind of biological fact about humans that I read in a fantastic book, and it was talking about AIDS before. Well, back in the 80s, you remember when Reagan was president, no one knew what it was called. It just hit this country, and it was called gay men's health crisis. And the federal government released this, basically they were trying to control this and trying to contain this and see what was going on, and they released these figures. You know, basically the people most at risk were men, or individual, I don't even think they singled out to me, but it was men who had more than 1,000 partners in their lifetime. And I'm a heterosexual male, and I have not even come close to that. I mean, maybe all building up towards 100, and I'm 39. But I mean, that's when you get
to... Yeah, you got a lot to look forward to. Well, you got a lot to look forward to.
No, what I'm saying is that you get two male sex drives together, and it's like they're on overdrive, whereas women, they contain themselves... In the statistics for
that's something that we have to say is the benefit of marriage and family. It's meant in part to control the man's wildness. Now, some men actually understand that, and they seek that in a woman and in marriage and in family, because they understand what they can become or what they had become without the woman as a controlling or, let's say, steadying sail, to put it in a different analogy. Woman is supposed to do that for a man, and for marriage is supposed to do that to guys. But you see, you never hear that discussed, do you? Do you ever hear anywhere in the media, well, marriage is wonderful for men to control those impulses, because otherwise you're going to be dissipated your whole life and live like a dog. I don't hear that anywhere. I never hear it discussed.
No, I'm afraid you're right. Marriage does, it sublimates. It's a fantastic, I'm very traditional about marriage. I'm very sexual. But you can be married to a woman who's gives you sexual satisfaction. Absolutely. You know, I've been lucky in that regard. And you know, but it, I mean, it might, you know, I mean, it's something that sublimates the primal urges, and that's, and it is very valuable, you know. We can't,
right. Well, we're talking about sex addiction because it's in the news. This is basically news-related. But in America today, sex, as you well know, is everywhere. There's almost not a corner of America that is not touched by salaciousness. In fact, I intend to discuss this during my interview this weekend with the major magazine writer coming up to see me. I know this is going to come up because he's going to try to put me in the corner of Mr. Conservative, Mr. Family Values. Why do you oppose, let us say, this kind of behavior or this kind of advertised sexuality? And my answer is because take a look around you at society. Look at the children. Look at what it's done to family. And that is a result of so many different factors. Primarily, I think the ready accessibility and advent of pornography. If you were to say to me, what would be the single healthiest thing for this society to decide to do, aside from the obvious national security issues, the number one thing would be to rein in the free availability of pornography. Again, when I was a kid, a young man, if you went to a hotel, there was a Gideon Bible. Today, I don't care where you go. I don't care who owns the hotel. You can dial in a porno film. It goes on your bill. It's not even noted as a movie, so your company doesn't know it. Your family doesn't know it. And what do you think that does to a man's mind? Internet pornography, readily available everywhere. What does that do to children? Tell me what that does to a young child to be able to go on the internet and see such graphic images, and tell me what it does to his or her sexuality when they're 11, 12, 13 years old, and they're starting to see what it's like to be a man or a woman, or a young man or a young woman. Tell them how they feel comparing themselves to the gargantuan specimens, or the oversexed specimens, or the overdriven specimens in pornography. Tell me what that does to children. And so, as I say, this is a large topic. I'm certainly not going to solve it, but I absolutely think that part of any campaign for the presidency has to go back to my principal three things: borders, language, and culture. And I would say that when you talk about culture and you talk about family values, this issue of pornography has to be included into that discussion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back. I think we've had a very interesting discussion today about sex addiction owing to the Tiger Woods story. But, you know, let's not forget what I opened the show with, which is that they catch a guy in a New Jersey hotel room. That he has guns and 50 caliber ammo, and he has a bulletproof vest. He has night vision scope. He has a police scanner. He has a map of a U.S. military base. And he has a Middle Eastern colored traditional headdress, and the FBI says, presently, there does not appear to be a link to terrorism. Woodson does not appear to have a link to any known terrorist groups. Why does the FBI continue to throw dust in our eyes? They must know the truth. Don't they understand that this destroys credibility with the American people? Why would they want to tell us there is no relationship to terrorism when a child will put two and two together here? So today it's right out of 1984. Islamic terrorism is neither Islamic nor terrorism. No, he was an Irish nun, but he was a cross-dresser. That's why he had the headdress. Crazy, crazy, the whole thing. And it's the same with the sex addiction. They see Tiger Woods is seeking a sex addiction treatment. It's not sex addiction. The guy was a dog, that's all. It was a dog. Are you telling me he wasn't attracted to his wife? Why not? They were still young. It's not like they've been married 900 years. He had a gorgeous wife. And who was he with? Were any of the women he was with, if you look at them, equal to her in beauty or grace or charm? I mean, looking from the outside, I don't think so. Unless there were, you know, physical problems. You don't know what goes on behind closed doors. You know, she could have been frigid or whatever they call it. I don't even think that word is used today. It's a funny word because no one uses it. He's like a dirty word, frigid. It's funny how many words that in my day were considered the norm are considered pornographic today, while filth and dirt is considered beautiful. The filthier and the dirtier the picture, the more beautiful it is. But a family of two men, a man and a woman, and three children with a house and a picket fence is considered pornographic today because of the mentality that permeates the culture, the liberal, so-called liberal mentality. So this is how, you know, any topic, by the way, can lead you back and forth to politics or in and out of politics. And that's why I went to that sports station in San Francisco, KTRB, a 50,000-watt powerhouse that I'm going to begin on Monday. Believe me, I'll turn sports into politics and politics into sports because, as I said yesterday, in politics as in sports, it's either you're safe or you're out. And right now, would you say that Obama is safe or is he out? He's not exactly out and he's not exactly safe quite yet. But the game he was playing is no longer the same game that he's playing today. Everybody knows that. There's an article on michaelsavage.com that I linked to, which says that his honeymoon with the media is over, that it started a few months ago. Well, I don't believe it exactly. They're still, doing his work for him. They may as well be PR arm of the White House, which is a shame because the press is supposed to be the watchdog, not the lapdog, which is why conservative radio thrives. You wouldn't be listening to the show. If you could go to a news machine and look inside USA Today or your local Palm Beach Post or San Francisco or New York Times, and you could see a headline that was real every day, as was in my lifetime real. Real headlines for real people. You'd buy the paper. And you say, well, why would I buy the paper when I get on the internet? I thought about it. I could save a newspaper. I know the people's mentality and mind. They hire all the wrong people to run newspapers. And they say, well, it's because all the ad revenue went to the internet. Well, that's partly true. But you ask anybody in the internet business how much revenue is really being produced, you'll find out that that's a lie. No, the readership to newspapers and the decline of such is related to many factors, but the number one factor is the fact that their politics are anti-American, anti-family. Therefore, the logical audience for a newspaper would not buy it. Why would you buy a paper and bring it home to your family if it attacks every one of your values? You wouldn't. But let us say a newspaper, in bold headlines, every day was pro-family, pro-religion, pro-military, pro-law and order, etc. You get the picture. You might bring it home the way my mother brought it home. She used it as a lesson for me. She'd hold it up every day and she'd say, look at that. Look what happened to him as a result of him doing that. Look where he wound up in the gutter. Or look at this heroic cop, she would say, looking at the Daily News when I was a kid. Look how he saved these people. So she used the newspaper as a teaching tool. And that's what newspapers were in a large part in the United States of America until the mentality of the 60s permeated not only the newsroom, but also the universities and everywhere else. Consequently, church attendance is down except amongst immigrants. And that's a fact. I mean, it's not even a slam. It's a fact. And newspaper readership has fallen off the globe primarily because, as I said to you, why would you want to take that home? That anti-family, anti-Americanism. Why would you want that in your house? Would you want your children to see it? Of course not, so you don't buy it. And that's why you turn to talk radio, because on this show and on shows that are conservative, every day you can be sure you know where we're coming from. And where we're coming from is where you are. We're coming from where you are because we're you. We're not them. We're not in the newsroom. We're not in academia. And it doesn't mean that we don't understand them, but they're not going to change. They'd rather destroy the newspaper, as Sulzberger has done with his grandfather's great enterprise, the New York Times. They'd rather see it destroyed than change their politics and admit that they were wrong. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Visit TRNCentral.com, your one-stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, one of the big stories of the day today, frankly, is the acorn workers in Louisiana arrested by the, I think, the FBI for going into Senator Landrieu's office, and they claim trying to tamper with her phones to tap them. I don't know who to believe, frankly. I know that Landrieu and Louisiana do not add up to a, let us put it to you this way, a kosher situation for me. And so that's one side. On the other hand, if they say they went in there brazenly to tamper with her phones, that would be crazy. I don't know that they would do that. Well, here's a little bit of information from one of my listeners who's a new sports pal. And he says, I'll bet you did not know this. He said, today we hear the Savage Nation is moving to a sports station in the Bay Area. He said, did you know that there are terms such as Red Sox Nation, Trojans Nation, Yankees Nation, Gator Nation, and so on? To the best of my knowledge, he says, this was all appropriated from the Savage Nation, just as was Compassionate Conservative. He writes, I do not think I ever heard any of it until Red Sox Nation, maybe as late as the early 2000s, but I recall Savage Nation as far back as 96 on your local station. Just a little note for you to know. And that, of course, is referencing my moving to the 50,000-watt KTRB 860 on the dial all sports station in San Francisco on February 1 with my statement that in politics as in sports, either you're safe or you're out. And I also said, sports fans love an underdog, and in the uber-socialist Bay Area, I am the biggest underdog the media has ever heard, which is all true. We'll see how it works out, Beowulf. You're getting good feedback up at TRN on this?
Very good feedback. We've had a bunch of listener emails, a couple of which I forwarded to you. They're looking forward to you appearing on the new station.
Well, we're going to do a potpourri right now. I just got an email from my friends in the Navy League, and I said, are there any new events going on? And this is interesting. He says, well, I'm not sure if you're interested in attending the annual Naval War College Symposium. I hope it has something to do with more than berthing at sea, but he sent me a flyer. He said, four or five NWC faculty members discussed national security issues with an audience consisting of mainly Navy reservists and members of Navy League. And on June 5, we have invited the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Gary Roughhead, great name, as our guest speaker for our Battle of Midway celebration black tie dinner at the Marines Memorial Club. Hey, that's pretty good. What a name that is, Admiral Roughhead. Don't you like that?
Rough and ready. Let's hope it's a victory.
How would you define our admirals today, Beowulf? What pet name would you give them? It wouldn't be Rough something, would it?
Head or trade? You decide.
I don't know.
They've gone in one generation from victory at sea to birth at sea.
Isn't that something? From victory at sea to Vicky at sea. This is terrible. The pirates are laughing at us.
Jesus.
Speaking of Muslim pirates, Islamic terrorism is neither Islamic nor terrorism anymore, Beowulf. We've noticed that earlier, didn't we?
Yeah. It's crazy.
There's a story on top right of michaelsavage.com. That just about says it all. This takes the cake for political insanity. They arrest the guy. He has a bulletproof vest, night vision goggles, grenade launchers. He has a traditional Middle Eastern red, white color traditional headdress in his room, right?
Yep, that's right.
Bulletproof vest, semi-automatic Bushmaster rifle, another Bushmaster 308 caliber semi-automatic rifle, and the FBI says this was not terrorist-related. Another major terrorist attack by a Muslim extremist, but the media and the FBI covered up. The headline from the Associated Pukes is, man arrested after weapons, map of U.S. military facility seized from New Jersey motel room. But what the headline didn't tell you, what they buried far into the story, is that they found a Middle Eastern red and white colored traditional headdress in his room. Well, it could be that he wasn't an Arab terrorist or sympathetic to Al-Qaeda or such, or the Taliban bake off. It could have been he was just coming from a school play.
Oh, of course, of course. And it could be the fact that he had a map of a military facility in his room that they also found. He was probably just trying to demonstrate his patriotism by touring a local military facility.
And he needed these weapons because, being a person of color, he probably felt the racists in the military, you know, could kill him.
Well, because as Errol Suthers has told us, that white supremacists are the real danger.
Well, the white supremacists in the military are the real trouble.
Oh, absolutely.
He also had a 37-millimeter Cobra grenade launcher,
Jesus,
a second bulletproof vest, a Russian-made night vision scope, a police scanner, hundreds of rounds of 50 caliber and 308 ammo, and a map of the U.S. military installation. But they said it's not Islamic terrorism. In fact, the reporter who wrote the story refuses to identify this wonderful prize of a human being. We have his picture on michaelsavage.com. They won't say he's Muslim, and they refuse to identify him as a terrorist, even though this is clearly a case of terrorism. But it gets worse. The FBI statement says that this is not terrorism. Here's what some 10th-rate PR hack for the FBI wrote yesterday. Quote, "Presently, there does not appear to be a link to terrorism. Woodson does not appear to have a link to any known terrorist groups, nor a specific terrorist plot. However, the matter is still under investigation, and these should only be considered preliminary findings. It is possible that Mr. Woodson could face federal gun charges, but that has yet to be determined." As I said, Beowulf, he's not only not a terrorist, even though he was casing a military installation with all of this weaponry, right? Yeah. And he had an Arab headdress in his suitcase. It is possible that he'll be freed because he didn't actually kill anybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, if one of those scopes that he had has one of the Bible verses on it, maybe he could sue for a violation of his freedom of religion.
It could be why he did this.
That could have pushed him over the edge.
It could have triggered him. It could have triggered his normal, peaceful Muslim into violence, having a crusader verse on a scope.
Good God.
The real danger is not the terrorists, as you well know. It's the refusal to acknowledge the terrorists and who they actually are. According to the government, media, military, police complex, Islamic terrorism is neither Islamic nor terrorism. And that is why the West, and that is why the United States, is on the verge of collapse. Islamic terrorism is neither Islamic nor terrorism. Huh. Isn't that nice, Beowulf? What do you think he was doing there with all the night vision scopes, grenade launchers, and all of that? What might they say he was doing there?
He was probably desperately trying to eke out a living, selling goods at a gun show because of the tough economy.
Mm-hmm. Here's another story on my website. Muslim-turned-Christian asks Obama for help. They converted to Christianity in a largely Muslim country, and as you know, Islam is a very accepting religion. They're trying to kill her. That's because they, you know, they feel she's an infidel now and an apostate. There's nothing worse to a tolerant religion. So she's appealing to Obama for help. I kind of think he'll give her a deaf ear, don't you?
I think probably so.
Speaking of deaf ears, there's an interesting picture of women in full body burqas where everything is covered. They look like Ku Klux Klan members, but they're not. They're Muslim women. And the headline is, "Throwback outfits to be thrown out in France." That's my headline.
Yeah.
The article says a French parliamentary panel recommended moves to curb the wearing of Muslim veils in certain public facilities and suggested lawmakers should pass a resolution condemning the garments. Have you ever seen anything like this, Beowulf? Women walking around like this looking like Ku Klux Klan members?
It's crazy to see, and it's important to note that even France, which is a far-left country, has decided to draw a line. They're not going to take it anymore.
Well, not here, though. Here they'll take it forever.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
By now you all know how important it is to me that chimpanzees are protected. They're not pets. And the use of chimpanzees in medical experiments should be stopped. Did you know that there's a bill in the House pushing to protect these animals? It's called the Great Ape Protection Act, H.R. 1326. I wonder if it refers to conservatives. In any case, it's receiving bipartisan support in the House. And we are joined now by Dr. Hope Ferdosian with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine to talk about it. Dr. Hope, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
First, tell us about your background.
I'm a double board certified physician in internal medicine and general preventive medicine and public health. I am the director of research policy for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Why is this act important to all of us and to you?
Well, the Great Ape Protection Act is really a no-brainer. The Great Ape Protection Act, which is also referred to as H.R. 1326, is a bipartisan bill introduced by Representatives Towns, Reichert, Langevin, and Bartlett. And the bill currently has more than 140 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. Chimpanzees are incredibly intelligent animals. They use tools, they solve complex problems, and they even learn American Sign Language. They're also highly social animals, much like we are. They enjoy being around other chimpanzees. And it's just absolutely tragic that these amazing individuals are locked up in laboratories and cages for the majority of their lives.
How closely are chimps related to us?
Well, chimpanzees are our closest living relatives. They share about 98 to 99% of our DNA, and they can use all types of tools. They can solve complex problems that they're faced with. And perhaps most importantly, they suffer, and they can even suffer from psychiatric disorders like depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other anxiety disorders.
What are the problems with using chimpanzees in scientific experiments?
Well, the use of chimpanzees in research is quite disturbing. I'm shocked that laboratories in the United States are allowed to keep chimpanzees in cages about the size of a kitchen table, and sometimes for decades. Chimpanzees don't get the social contact they need in those settings, and they can become depressed and anxious and even severely mutilate themselves. And then, of course, there are the experiments themselves. Chimpanzees are infected with HIV, hepatitis, and other diseases. And the thing is that this research hasn't really helped humans, but this research has inflicted incredible suffering on chimpanzees. And that's why we've got to pass the Great Ape Protection Act.
Well, how many countries actually still use chimpanzees in research?
The United States is actually the only country in the world still using chimpanzees in large-scale invasive research. For example, the United Kingdom stopped issuing licenses for chimpanzee research back in 1997. Japan has also stopped using chimpanzees in invasive research. Germany is another country that stopped using chimpanzees in invasive research, and many other countries are in that same boat.
Why did they stop?
Many countries have stopped experimenting on chimpanzees because they recognize that these intelligent individuals deserve better. They deserve more of our compassion. But many scientists are acknowledging that experiments on chimpanzees have failed. They've been a waste of money, and they've hurt chimpanzees without really helping people.
You've researched the effects on these chimps in labs, and what have you found?
Well, my colleagues and I have conducted a purely observational study of chimpanzees who have been used in laboratory research but are now living in sanctuaries. And we found that these chimpanzees have displayed symptoms of depression and anxiety disorders like post-traumatic stress disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. They display symptoms of compulsive behaviors. And really, that's not too surprising given the conditions in the laboratories. And chimpanzees used for research are typically taken from their mothers at a very early age, deprived of normal social relationships, and they're subjected to repeated physical traumas. Chimpanzees can be knocked down, darted with anesthetic guns numerous times throughout their lives, subject to multiple biopsies and other surgical and harmful procedures.
Tell us about the Great Ape Protection Act.
The Great Ape Protection Act would phase out invasive and harmful experiments on chimpanzees. It would also release federally owned chimpanzees to sanctuaries. And if the bill passes, hundreds of chimpanzees would go from laboratory cages to sanctuaries, where they'd be taken care of and protected in sanctuaries.
Do you think it's going to pass?
Well, I've been so impressed with how much amazing momentum this bill has. The Great Ape Protection Act has more than 140 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, and we seem to get more and more support every week. People just seem to realize that it's time to stop experimenting on chimpanzees.
Well, what can my Savage Nation listeners do?
I hope everyone listening today will contact their senators and representatives. Please tell them to support the Great Ape Protection Act. And your listeners can get more information on our website, www.pcrm.org. I think the main thing to realize is that chimpanzee experiments are not going to provide the answers we need for human diseases. Experimenting on chimpanzees is not the best way to protect human health, and chimpanzees are continuing to suffer. That's why we need to pass the Great Ape Protection Act as soon as we can.
Dr. Hope, thanks for what you're doing and for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Sparring model found burned in North Miami trash bin. Oh, my God. Miami Beach's posh Fontainebleau. Posh. When I was a kid, it wasn't posh. When it was built, it wasn't posh. It was the Borscht Belt in the sun. On Sunday night, police found the body burned beyond recognition at a dumpster in North Miami. The body, later identified through a dental records, was that of the 26-year-old Sladuski. Oh, my God. How does a thing like this happen? What? North Miami police said Sladuski was last seen Sunday about 7 at Miami's Club Space. She was with her boyfriend, Kevin Klim. The two got into a fight at the club. I like tabloid stuff. Kim told authorities he wanted to leave because she was too drunk. She yelled at him and bounces threw them out of him out of the club. He took a taxi to their Miami Beach hotel and told police it was the last time he had seen her. Well, my God. So she went out with someone from the nightclub who gave her the business and then set her on fire? I don't know what to say about this anymore. I've never been in a nightclub in my life. I don't go to nightclubs. What do you need in a nightclub? To see other drunks sitting around in a nice outfit? What is a nightclub? It's like a bar is a blue-collar place to have a drink, right? Like a VFW hall that has a bar. That would be a bar. I don't know. Maybe I'm just out of touch with America. This is why the Muslims are at war with us, by the way. It's because of stories like this.
Savage.
Visit TRNCentral.com, your one-stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Heard my views on Brown's win in Massachusetts. Joining us now with a look on how Scott Brown's win may affect the healthcare debate is Robert Scott Bell.
Thanks, Michael. It's always good to be back to rock the Savage Nation with you for health, freedom, and liberty. And of course, this past week, we saw a really interesting turn of events in regards to the so-called health care reform bill, as the election of Massachusetts Republican Scott Brown appears to have impacted maybe the resolve of the Democrats to force the reform bill through. Maybe they're getting the idea that these new realities concerning their impending demise are not overstated at the ballot box here. Of course, my concern as well still exists because a Republican in Massachusetts is more like a Democrat probably everywhere else. But is the health care reform bill dead? I like to promote a culture of life usually, but in this case, I think this would be a death that would serve all of America much better. But I think that we might not be out of the woods yet. In fact, you probably heard this interview that was done of Scott Brown after he was elected. He evidently felt the need to call the widow of Ted Kennedy as if, there was some kind of a monarchy thing going on that he somehow stepped in.
Well, we have a clip. Play it.
You know, on a personal note, you said last night the first call you made after your victory was to Ted Kennedy's widow, Vicky. How comfortable was that for both of you, knowing that you plan to do everything you can to derail what Ted Kennedy called the cause of his lifetime, which is health care reform?
Well, first of all, you're misrepresenting. I never said I was going to do everything I can to stop health care. I believe that everybody should have health care. It's just a question on how we do it.
Hmm.
You see, what concerns me here about Scott Brown in that statement is he's insinuating that, you know, as everybody should have health care. Now, of course, it sounds great. Everybody should have health care. But who's going to provide it? And where in the founding documents of our country, in the Declaration of Independence, did we declare independence from the crown so we could have health care for all? Or our Constitution, Bill of Rights, anywhere where it acknowledged or recognized some kind of right to health care? And the last time I looked up at the definition of a right, it was not something you could exercise in violation of somebody else's rights. And it couldn't possibly be a right. Because if you have to steal from others to exercise it, again, it violates fundamental rights of other people. Now, of course, the form of health care we've talked about over the weeks here is a disaster as well. I mean, the whole idea of strengthening an existing monopoly, medical or otherwise, is not really good for the health of the people, especially the poorest among us. Because, as you know, they are likely really suffering from a lack of adequate nutrition. I mean, we could look around the world and see diseases that are the result of a lack of nutrients, basic nutrients. And it's certain when you've got a whole class of people on the American continent subsisting on food devoid of certain vitamins or trace minerals, that's going to result in diseases.
Exactly.
But those diseases are not evidence of a deficiency of an FDA-approved pharmaceutical drug. Because the track record, as we've discussed as well, Michael, is pretty poor for approval and particularly the safety after the approval. And, of course, that goes even beyond the idea that, maybe we don't have a drug deficiency. Maybe we should be looking to nutrition first. But that is not anywhere going to be allowed within the Democratic reform plans. We've already seen this.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
There's already no allowances for natural medicine in our existing monopoly. Medical doctors we've covered on this program as well have been attacked simply for going outside what is considered or called the standard of care, which is very difficult to define. I could define it, but the medical boards are supposed to be the ones that can, and you can never pin them down to do it. And it's just a matter of, well, we know it when we see it. Oh, if you're not giving enough drugs, then that's not the standard of care we approve of, then we're going to pull your license. Which begs the question of healing being a gift of the Creator or something that is a privilege bestowed upon us by government. Did you ever think about that? Because the whole idea of licensure is interesting because people are pretty convinced that, licensure is a great thing because it protects the public. But then you look at the licenses bestowed upon the medical community, and there are great doctors out there. No one's disputing that. But the profession, by and large, has been allowed to become, as we say, the third leading cause of death. That's not right. They have licenses, but the licenses are protecting the monopoly more than they're protecting the health of the people. And we've got drugs approved. They get approved, and then we find out, oh my gosh, they're not as safe as the FDA is supposed to say and approve that they are. There's actually studies about antidepressants now more. Not only did they find out that the SSRIs don't work, except as they say in extreme, extreme cases, but they're no better than placebo. But placebo, at least you're not going to go out and pick up your gun, shoot up a school. But these antidepressants are now being tied to preterm births.
What? No.
That's right. There was a study that said among nearly 3,000 women who gave birth in Washington state, those who started taking SSRI antidepressants in the second or third trimester had a higher risk of preterm birth. And this was out of Reuters was reporting this, which was citing a study in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
Oh, my God.
Now, compared to those not giving the meds, the women were nearly five times as likely to deliver prematurely. And, of course, that increases the risk of death of an infant and also the risk of chronic disease, even starting in childhood. So more dependency on a system that it's not affordable. It's untenable. And, of course, I would say it's unconscionable that it's a monopoly. And never in that, you look at a study like that, and of course, if you're trained in nutrition, you say, clearly, these women have a depleted nutrient basis. In other words, we know that a developing fetus requires a tremendous amount of chromium, for instance, for chromosomal integrity and development. And of course, the mom, if she's not aware of this and she's eating refined foods that have no chromium in it, for an example, we're going to see gestational diabetes. We're going to see an increase in potential birth defects. And, of course, depression, which is a classic among many things, but also a chromium deficiency. But nowhere in the medical monopoly that the Democrats would want to enforce and strengthen even more is there any acknowledgement or recognition that maybe we should try nutrients as a first order of business. No, I'm not calling for a banning of modern medicine. We're just talking about a logical progression. Isn't it basically common sense to say, maybe there are nutrients not there in this woman? The developing child needs a lot. It's depleting the mom. Let's replenish that. Pretty basic. So instead of that, we look and say, okay, we've got depressed people. We've got depressed moms. Let's put them on these drugs. And then the FDA says they're okay. Yet now we find out they're causing more preterm births and, of course, a lot of complications. And then we're breeding another generation of Americans to be dependent on big government and big pharma, the combination of which has proven to be quite deadly.
Mm-hmm. I'm sick of this.
So this is also what concerns me about Senator Scott Brown now, after they swear him in. Is he going to be an establishment Republican, a big government Republican, or is he one that truly values limited government, constitutional government, a return to the basic concept that Americans should be free to live their lives, to care for their health the way they believe, not the way that a bunch of politicians that can't even care for their own health, much less the health of the nation, are trying to do, especially on the Democratic side. And, of course, we know Scott Brown voted for the Massachusetts socialized sort of medicine system there. I know it's not the same as what they're proposing nationally or on a federal level, but still, it gives me pause for concern here. And we've talked about the election year. How do we know who to vote for instance? It isn't the problem of voting. It's more or less who we're voting for, the choices that have been bestowed upon us by those elitists within the establishment parties. And I'm thinking maybe a good litmus test in 2010, Michael, might be to say, hey, is this person running for office being strongly and powerfully endorsed by the party they're a member of? Or is there a little reluctance on the part of the party? Or are they outright against them? Because that might be an indication that, we might have somebody that actually values small government, constitutional government, and something to look out for when we're, looking at, have we totally killed the health bill, or is it just slowed down? Because there's certainly enough interviews with the Democrats that they're looking to foist it upon us again in any way, shape, or form that they can, whether they bring it down from the 60-vote supermajority that they had down to maybe we can get a 51-vote majority and just ram it down the throats of the American people, even though it is not needed. That's right. I said it is not needed.
Why do you say that?
We have too much government intrusion, too much government interference in the health of the American people. We need the common sense to come back into it. Moms, grandmas, we knew what to do, right? You knew what to do. Passed down from generation to generation. Basic concepts of eating right, exercising, all of these things that do not require drugs. And yes, should you need them, they'll be available still. But we'll have affordability because there would be competition among all forms of health, healing, and care that is available. As if the United States was only founded in allopathic pharmaceutical medicine? No. No, I mean, the whole history of America was complete with herbal medicine, eclectic medicine, homeopathic medicines. And suddenly we've got so much technology that we would just divorce ourselves from nature? That makes less than no sense. That's to me, a form of insanity and a form of mass suicide.
This is unbelievable to me.
And I reiterate, for those Democrats, or if Scott Brown believes that it's a right to have health care, I'm not sure in Brown's case, but if he does, a right is something you can exercise without violating anybody else's rights, which is why health care can never be a right. I'm sorry. The Democrats, you Democrats, you're wrong. And you Republicans that believe in corporatism in this case are also wrong. And maybe that's why more Americans are refusing to identify with either party. You ask the question, is there a party of freedom in the House? Is it the Tea Party? Is there a possibility to restore integrity to the Republican Party? Certainly, we'd all like to see that. But the health care debacle is not over. They're going to come back and try again. So this is why I urge all the Savage Nation listeners to do something here in regards to choosing candidates that will acknowledge and honor that which we know is very important here, the freedom to choose the health care that we believe, not Nancy Pelosi, not Harry Reid, not Barack Obama, and not even Scott Brown. What do you believe? That's what we want to see supported here.
Robert, thanks for the report.
Thanks again, Michael. Always a pleasure to be on with you in the Savage Nation audience. And, of course, you can keep checking with the blog for upcoming events as such at robertscottbell.blogspot.com. Thanks for helping me spread the message of health freedom.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
For the first time, Obama seems to be admitting that he might be a one-term president.
The one thing I'm clear about is that I'd rather be a really good one-term president than a mediocre two-term president. And I believe that. There's a tendency in Washington to think that our job description of elected officials is to get reelected. That's not our job description. When your poll numbers drop, you're an idiot. When your poll numbers are high, you're a genius. If my poll numbers are low, then I'm cool and cerebral and cold and detached. If my poll numbers are high, boy, he's calm and reasoned.
But he still hasn't gotten the message from Massachusetts. He's still pushing far-left, socialist-like policies.
Every health economist out there who's serious about this stuff will tell you it's a vast improvement over the status quo.
Can you guarantee them still there will be no taxes on anybody who makes under $250,000 a year? Is that still the absolute rule?
I can guarantee that the worst thing we could do would be to raise taxes when the economy is still this weak.
But wait, the governor of California, Arnold the Strudelmaker, has an interesting plan for illegals. Listen.
I think that there's no reason why we should have just state employees and the public prisons. Why shouldn't we have private prisons and private prisons compete with the public prisons? I don't want to go and get rid of the public prisons, not at all. It's not an attack on the labor union, even though they may take it as such. If we can go and take inmates, for instance, the 20,000 inmates that are illegal immigrants that are here, and get them to Mexico. Think about it. California gives Mexico the money. Not that, hey, you take care of them, these are you citizens. No, not at all. We pay them to build a prison down in Mexico, and then we have those undocumented immigrants be down there in a prison, and with their prison guards and all this, it would half the cost to build the prisons, and half the cost to run the prisons.
Here's the rest of the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Obama's honeymoon with media is history. Schwarzenegger says send prisoners to Mexico, but there's a caveat there. He wants to pay Mexico to build new prisons. Well, he's half right. Even a stopwatch is right twice a day. He's right once a day, so it means... I don't know what that means. If a stop clock is right twice a day, and Schwarzenegger is only right once today, what does that mean, Bill? That's a tough one. That's a Rubik's Cube or Savage Cube. A report says Al-Qaeda aims to use WMDs against the U.S. Ho-hum. Chavez closed down an anti-Chavez TV channel. I guess that would appeal to MoveOn.scum. ABC News says, does everyone in the Obama administration know we're at war? The decision to treat the crotch bomber as a criminal prevented the military and the intelligence community from obtaining information. Gee, I wonder, do you think that's why they did it? Indonesia considers tearing down Obama's statue. The statue of Little Barry, as Obama was known when he lived in the capital in the late 60s, stands in central Jakarta's park, Menteng Park. I thought he was born in Hawaii. Why would they build a statue to him in Indonesia, Little Barry?
I guess they feel some sort of affinity with him, maybe a religious affinity of some sort.
Kinship.
Yeah, that's the word.
Support Michael Bannon through the Savage Legal Fund on MichaelSavage.com. Great picture of Tiger Woods' wife. Man, was he crazy. Wow. Look at her in that tight sweater and those tight jeans. What is this guy? This guy is sick. No wonder he's in sex rehab. Didn't he know what he had? Here's a guy who had like filet mignon and he was going out looking for a kennel ration. Not even a hamburger. He wanted to eat dog food. Okay, San Francisco, Kyle, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm more concerned than ever about the left's reaction to the terrorism issue. I used to live in the Castro District here in San Francisco, and I was overhearing some people discussing the crotch bomber. Their concern was not for America. Their concern was for Muslims. Their concern was, oh, what if there's discrimination? The people, especially out here in San Francisco, are living in a different world. A traditional American would be concerned for their country. A left-winger, who I do agree with you, has a mental disorder, is concerned about Muslims, and they simply are out of touch with mainstream...
Yeah, they're out of touch with reality, and they're the reason that we are in trouble, because their man is in the White House. That's the real problem. Now, whether Obama has changed as a result of the crotch bomber is another story. There are those pundits who are saying he seems to have changed. He seems to think we're at war. He actually used the word war. He used the word Muslim in his speech. I actually think that Obama's frightened by what happened. I think Obama actually is coming to terms with the reality of the job as president. Whether he'll actually be able to move the ship of state, I don't know. I think that he's put so many, you know, when you have a ship and you're the captain, you don't actually turn the wheel. You give orders to those below you. Whether those below you will actually turn the ship from the iceberg is another story. I don't know. I don't think he has time to turn it from the iceberg.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, why did you move from San Francisco? Where'd you move, to Arkansas?
Oh, I just moved out of the Castro. I am a gay conservative, which is very sinful in San Francisco.
Yeah, I know. You must have really been ostracized in the Castro.
Absolutely, especially because I listened to you. I have for several years now.
Many gay people love my show. Many, many gay women love my show. Many gay men love the show because they actually hear me. They don't read the garbage that's written about me. They know where I stand. I am a sexual libertarian. I've said that for 15 years. I am a sexual libertarian, which is do as you wish, just leave me alone.
And Dr. Savage, please run for Senate here in California. If Acorn is
in fact,
involved,
you know, if sexual politics came up, I don't care what they would say to me. I would say I'm a sexual libertarian. If you're an adult, do what you want. Just leave me alone. Stop trying to sell me and stop trying to push me, and we'll all be friends. Let's move on already. There's more important topics, aren't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's a very traditional American view. And
And what's the good of having sexual freedom if you're dead?
Exactly.
So my position is quite clear, which is that national security trumps all other concerns. And we do not have the proper people in certain positions of national security. Moreover, they're all looking over their shoulders at the lawyers who are in the Justice Department, making sure that they are very, very fair to the terrorists. Kyle, yeah. May I send you a free copy of Abandoned Britain in a plain brown wrapper?
I would love that. Thank you very much.
Stay on the line. We'll send it to you in a plain brown wrapper so your neighbors are not alerted.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio.
Science Fiction Collectors, now available. The Victorious Mongoose Miniature. Brought to you by New Zealand's Academy Award-winning Weta Workshop. The Victorious Mongoose 1902A collectible ray pistol miniature version. Based on the full-size Victorious Mongoose, it measures a mere couple of thumbs and a bit and is absolutely exquisitely detailed. Made from confoundingly weighty metal, it has some rather uncomfortable-looking protrusions. Designed by Greg Broadmoor and modeled by David Tremont, this is another stunning piece for your collection. Dr. Grordbort's Victorious Mongoose Miniature is the perfect gift for this holiday season. Check out the full range of Dr. Grordbort's ray guns at www.wetanz.com. WetaNZ.com. That's WetaNZ.com. Dr. Grordbort's Victorious Mongoose Miniature. Order today.